This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's Thursday, May 9th, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. Mostly cloudy this afternoon, mild. A few sprinkles, maybe early, and then a high temperature of 69. We're up to 67 degrees now at O'Hare and the Lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. The market staged a little bit of a recovery this morning, but they're still solidly underwater. Let's get the latest from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
Rob, in just the last few minutes, stocks have actually cut losses in half, with the Dow lower by 136 points, certainly an improvement over the 400-point drop we saw at the open. NASDAQ down 31 points now, and the S&P off 9. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is sliding 0.25%. The improvement comes after President Trump said he received a beautiful letter from Chinese President Xi Jinping. Trump says the two leaders will probably speak by phone. This as a delegation from Beijing arrives in Washington to negotiate a potential trade deal. At midnight, U.S. tariffs on some $200 billion in Chinese goods are set to jump to 25%. The ongoing trade conflict with China helped to shrink the U.S. trade deficit with that country to a three-year low. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Lisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are hearing from Disney about a new Star Wars cook-up. Disney announces dates for three new Star Wars films, as well as four Avatar sequels.
And we'll talk about Mother's Day. Everybody loves mom, and we have the figures to prove it. We'll talk about the Mother's Day economic boom. That's at 12:49.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney has a good second quarter, beating Wall Street expectations. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the latest round of high-level trade talks with China is underway in Washington, while a report on the trade deficit and other key data are also out today. We're joined by Lance Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist at RIA Advisors in Houston. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Lance. We're talking about what's happening in China. Tell us how this is playing out. It's almost like theater.
Well, again, this shouldn't really be a surprise to any great degree. I was actually writing about this in January of last year, in 2018, talking about when we were actually getting into this trade war that, you know, China is playing a very, very long-term game. They've got a 50-year outlook. Xi is in office for the rest of his life versus a president in this country who's only in office for the next 5 years. So the ability for China to give up on major concessions, and these are things, obviously, the very hard challenges that China doesn't want to give up on, changing their laws, giving up on a lot of their technology transfers, et cetera. That's important for their long-term economic outlook versus a administration which is demanding resolution in the short term. But most likely when President Trump is out of office, whatever agreement is done will not be enforced in the next administration. So this is why you're seeing China now come back to the table, put a bit of hardball. Both economies have recovered in recent months. That's giving both the U.S. and China a bit of breathing room to play a little bit more tougher on the negotiation front.
At one point it's the pre-negotiations, President Trump said something about, you've killed the deal, something like that. They've killed the deal. And then he said that Xi, the president there, wrote him a beautiful letter as the trade talks got underway. This is quite a drama.
Don't be surprised about the as you said a second ago, I think very correctly, this is a bit of theater here. President Trump has really pegged a lot of his presidential success based on the stock market. This is why lately you've seen him talking about cut rates and restart QE. We'd have a booming market like China because China's done a lot of state-sponsored stimulus into their economy. I'm not sure that's exactly where we want to go in the U.S., but very, very much at the success of Donald Trump that he personally, he pins to what the stock market is doing. So don't be surprised that over this weekend, you're going to get some tweets out of the White House. Had a wonderful dinner. He had a great conversation with President Xi on the phone. They're going to get a trade deal done. The tariffs that come online tonight are not going to actually be imposed for almost a month because it won't be on any of the goods that are currently in transit. The new tariffs will apply to new goods being shipped, which won't be starting until about 2 weeks from now. So there's a delay and there's some in here for some negotiations to occur for Trump to back off these tariffs, saying they've got the deal back on the table. Don't be surprised if that doesn't happen.
You talked about how when it comes to waiting the other guy out, China has the luxury of all the time in the world, and President Trump is kind of chained to the clock of the American electoral system. At what point could President Trump walk away from these negotiations and call himself a winner, and what would that deal look like?
Well, and I think this is going to be an interesting thing. Remember, this is a fight that Donald Trump picked when he first got into office. He's the one that started this negotiation. Very likely, he could walk away from this deal with some basic concessions, and that we'll see a rebound in the market when that deal is done. Because, look, this is a lot of pressure. Exports under pressure. We saw the trade deficit narrow with China, and that's not necessarily because he's winning the trade war with China. It's because U.S. consumers are importing less, and we're seeing that on a lot of different fronts on terms of imports. Stronger dollars hurting exports. That's hurt corporate profits. Yes. Companies are about 70% of companies are beating earnings estimates, but that's only because we've lowered estimates by 12% since last year. So the bar has gotten very low for these companies to beat. So anything that comes in that reduces and removes that strain from both exports and imports will be viewed as a win for Trump. So he doesn't need much to walk away from the deal saying he and with the deal being done, mind you, that he's actually a winner in this transaction. I think that's ultimately what we'll see.
Well, if you're watching the stock market, take some Dramamine and buckle up because it's going to be
a busy day.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Lance Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist, RIA Advisors, based in Houston, Texas. The website, realinvestmentadvice.com, and he's on Twitter at Lance Roberts. Coming up, Disney thriving this year, and that's not even counting the blockbuster success of Avengers.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney has a solid second quarter, setting up what could prove to be a great year for the legendary entertainment company. We're joined by Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertier Group, based in Chicago. Tim, welcome back to the program. It's for a company like Disney, you talk about a strong portfolio. Not only the Avengers will easily be probably the biggest movie of the year, and that's just the appetizer for Walt this year.
Well, Rob, it's a good observation. There's no doubt, and arguably that movie is going to be probably the most successful in terms of box office ever. I think having surpassed Avatar. But you know, there was a great sub headline in Business Week last week. It said a ridiculously popular movie highlights a ridiculously successful year that may be ridiculously impossible to top, and that's a pretty good I think synopsis when you look at even going into this year. So looking back to last year. Tremendous results for Disney, and there are a number of different reasons for that. Franchises abound, but strategically, you know, there is an absolute gear shift that Disney has publicly announced, has basically said that they are aggressively shifting to, and that will literally mean significant losses in the near term to pivot to. And that is these streaming things that we've been talking about for many shows over the last 2 years on the New Business Hour. And it is a huge strategic shift for this company to put many, many chips on the table when it comes to what is now a phenomenon in streaming services. And that's going to be depressing to certain revenue streams and expectations that, say, television has been, for example, for Disney's profits over the years, such as ESPN, et cetera.
The Jim Cameron on Twitter today released a piece of artwork showing the Avengers logo sinking the Titanic, and just saying congratulations on being the new undisputed box office champ. And it makes sense because he's also under the Disney umbrella, because Disney's releasing three new Avatar movies. There are three more Star Wars movies coming out. And if you're going to Disney World in Florida, there's a Star Wars Land opening later this year. So that intellectual property they bought a decade ago is reaping some returns and then some.
Well, and Rob, that speaks to just the absolute sheer power of the brands and the franchises that they not only acquired, but they've also created for themselves over the decades as a company. And that's actually the bull case, right? So what I kind of outlined earlier was kind of the, you know, it may not get as good as it was this year and looming strategic changes. But the reality is that you could also make the argument, as I think some do, that Disney is probably maybe better positioned than most major, let's call them media companies, because of not only those franchises, but also their abilities to extend those franchises into things that aren't television or movies. For example, and you hinted at it, some of it, you know, new themes, new theme park and lands at both Disneyland and Disney World related to Star Wars, for example. They're supposed to be gigantic hits. And those are, that's not a box office movie, ticket. That's a vacation that can run up thousands of dollars. That's a differentiator that most of the major media companies that they compete with, Disney, don't have.
We'll be watching as it comes down during the rest of this year. Thanks so much, Tim, for joining us. Tim Hanlon, founder, CEO of the Vertera Group here in Chicago. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, a Facebook co-founder calls for the breakup of the company.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. WBBM Business, sponsored by Walter E. Smith Furniture. And here's Lisa Parenti.
Rob, we are still in the red, but a much better picture than earlier in the session. The Dow is down 182 points, NASDAQ lower by 43, and the S&P down 13. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg retreating 0.4%. We have a check on the grains markets. For that, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
And we had lower prices across the board. Corn was down as much as 11.5. Beans over 20, and wheat down 11. At the moment, we have December corn down 7 at 3.75 1/4. November beans are down 12 3/4 at 8.37 3/4. And wheat for July down 8 at 4.31. Front month in beans went under $8 today for the first time since 2008. Lower across the board in the grains. And this is Pete Manhart.
Wow. Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are lower. We'll see what's pressuring the markets.
Technology Thursday, a co-founder of Facebook says that CEO Mark Zuckerberg has too much power and needs to be kept in check.
We'll take a look at Mother's Day retail, which ranks behind only Christmas and back to school as a revenue generator.
Another suburb goes to court to stop a medical equipment sterilization company from resuming its use of a cancer-causing chemical.
WBBM Business, the markets are in negative territory. The Dow is down 187 points. The NASDAQ is down 45. The S&P 500 is down 14.
WBBM News Time, 2:31. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
And we're talking about Wall Street and the economy at the half hour. Markets are in the red, and we're joined by Mike Larson, senior analyst with WeissRatings.com, based in Jupiter, Florida. Mike, welcome back to the program. Of course, the headline is the trade negotiations with China. Was this an unexpected curveball this week in terms of kind of the drama taking place? And what would a resolution look like that the markets would enjoy?
Sure, you're absolutely right that these trade headlines and these trade complications really did come out of left field. I mean, heading into last weekend, there was a lot of optimism that this was going to kind of be a formality, a deal would be concluded by the end of this week, and everybody would go home happy. And obviously, starting Sunday night, that whole narrative really changed. So it's impossible to say, you know, from hour to hour, you're getting different headlines that suggest things are a little bit better or things are a little bit worse. So we're really not going to know until obviously the end of this week, hopefully, how things are going to shake out.
But the issue in terms of the market pricing is that markets were really priced for perfection heading into this week. I mean, if you look at gauges of volatility, for example, they've been extremely suppressed on the assumption that the economy is going to do just fine, we'll negotiate a deal, and there's no need to price risk into the market. So that's why I think we've seen such a big move in such a short period of time. I mean, the VIX gauge of volatility in the market's up 80% in just a few days. So that tells you it's coming off a very low level. And again, people really did get flat-footed here.
Is this a situation when you talk about the trade negotiations with China, and going back to President Trump's rhetoric on the campaign trail, is this a situation where there may not be a resolution in a traditional sense, but the White House could walk away happy if President Trump does reach a deal? They'll like it because President Trump negotiated it.
Well, you know, absolutely. If you look at the way this process has gone, you know, it seems like whenever the market starts to stumble, we get a little less in transience on the U.S. side that maybe we can reach a deal. Then China maybe steps back on the brink a little bit and thinks it's going to get a little bit more. So then the market goes down again on some disagreements. I mean, it's been a very yo-yo type environment for several weeks now. But my bigger issue with the market is that, again, when you're priced for perfection, it doesn't take a lot to derail things. I mean, if you look at tech stocks, for example, coming into the first 4 months of this year, they were on track. If you were to just assume things continued the way they did for the first 4 months for the rest of the year, tech stocks were on track to turn in a year as strong as you saw in 1999 at the peak of the dot-com bubble. So that's just one illustration of how there's a lot of confidence in the market and how things are getting a little bit thrown aside here.
The president declared a few hours ago that China had broken the deal. Can you patch that up and get back in?
You know, there's not a lot of time to get things patched up here. I mean, I suppose there's always the possibility for another can-kicking type delay. But, you know, this seems like a real impasse for the two sides to have to get over in a short period of time, or at least in as short a period of time as the market wants to see resolution. Again, if you head into this weekend with things still kind of being up in the air, that really could lead to some dislocations as people worry about what's going to happen as we head into next week as well.
And then if you are an investor and you're watching these negotiations play out and you're looking at CNBC.com and you see all the major indices in the red, what do you do to protect yourself, or can you or should you?
Sure. I mean, I've been saying as far back as January, February of 2018 that the market tone was changing. Behind the scenes, there's been less participation on rallies. You've seen more defensive sectors like real estate investment trusts and utilities start to take the lead, whereas industrials, materials, and those kinds of stocks have sort of fallen by the wayside. And I think that tells you something. This is very late in the economic cycle. This is a time where you want to be more defensive and conservative, focus on dividend-yielding type names, and, you know, just kind of recognize this is going to be a much more volatile environment. I mean, if you measure from January of 2018 through present day, you've made more money in just owning long-term U.S. treasuries than you have owning the S&P 500. So, I think that's just a situation where you have to be a little more careful, you have to be more defensive, and not just because of the trade issues, but because of the real risk that, you know, in a year or year and a half, we may be talking about a U.S. recession based on some indicators I'm following.
Don't China and the U.S. Really have to make a deal?
You know, you want to think that it would be in both sides' interests on some level, but a lot of times it's not just the pure financials and what it would mean for GDP and trade and so on. A lot of it's political and face-saving on both sides. So it's tough to get, you know, the politics to align with the economics, to align with the sentiment and everything else. And that's why this whole process has taken so long to play out in the first place.
You talk about the optics of these negotiations. You have China, the communist country, which may not be traditionally communist anymore, versus a president who's been held up as kind of the ultimate symbol of capitalism over the past 30 years. Is first off, you know, how much of China's economy is still communist, state-run, according to the principles of Karl Marx, and how much of it is a market-based economy?
Well, there's certainly a lot of state support, state backing, both on an informal and formal basis. I mean, if you look at their banking sector, you look at some of the base industries, you know, metals, construction, things like that. A lot of these big state-backed sort of elephant-type companies obviously have both implicit and explicit guarantees. And that's one of the issues that Trump is pushing back on, is how much can we compete in this market, this global economy, if those types of industries and those types of companies are getting state backing. So certainly we've had, you know, this has kind of been a fight that's been a long time coming, and there's been squabbles over the years.
President Trump, it just appears, is willing to take things further than previous administrations, and that's why we're up against this kind of deadline, and this whole situation could be coming to a head. Again, it's been building up for a number of years, though.
Well, thank you very much for the insight and analysis. Mike Larson, senior analyst, WeissRatings.com, based in Jupiter, Florida. Then coming up next in Technology Thursday, a call for the breakup of Facebook by one of the company's co-founders.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and the co-founder of Facebook, Chris Hughes, writes in a New York Times op-ed piece that regulators must step in immediately to break up the company. Let's talk with Kurt Wagner, who is social media and technology reporter at Bloomberg in San Francisco. What's going on, Kurt? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's usually shocking when the co-founder of a company then comes out and says, hey, please break this company up. So it's definitely making a lot of waves in Silicon Valley today. But what Hughes basically outlined in this pretty lengthy op-ed is two things. One, he thinks Facebook is too powerful as a company. And two, he thinks Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, is too powerful as an individual, and he thinks that both need to be rectified.
Too powerful and also losing some of its members because of the technology part.
Yeah, well, the part of the too powerful thing is that Facebook really has a lot of control over what content shows up in front of what people, right? So when you log on to the service, there's an algorithm, a software program that's determining what stuff shows up at the top of your feed and what stuff you have to scroll to see. And there are people at Facebook who are making, you know, that decision, essentially, and Mark Zuckerberg is the leader of that crew. And so a big part of his pitch in the op-ed is that Facebook is controlling information and speech much more than anyone realizes.
Wouldn't it be simple for Facebook just to go back to where it was in 2011 before the algorithm, when it was just simply you saw stuff in the order in which it was posted?
It's certainly a possibility that they could do that. I don't think that's going to get them off the hook at this point. And certainly for them, for business reasons, they don't want to do that. I mean, the whole reason that the algorithm exists is supposedly to make your newsfeed feel personal and to make it feel like, you know, you're seeing the most important things every time you log in. So if all of a sudden you log in and you're no longer seeing this kind of curated feed, you might not spend as much time on Facebook. You might abandon it altogether. And so, you know, there's business reasons they don't want to do that. And again, if Facebook is so big now, I don't even think doing that would appease all of its critics.
Well, the other thing outside of just the content and the negativity and what you would call stereotypical Facebook comments, I'll leave that to the listener to figure out what those are. But you have the Facebook experience itself, but you also have to ask Facebook to divorce itself from its treasure trove of data, and that's where the money is.
Exactly. I mean, this is a targeted advertising business. I mean, Facebook makes money from showing ads to people, and those ads are tailored to that individual based on either, you know, your interests, things that you've shared on the network, or even things you've looked at on the internet, your browsing history. And so that data is incredibly important. And Facebook also gets a lot of that data from Instagram, which is, another property that it owns, and Chris Hughes is saying should be spun out into a separate entity away from Facebook. That would obviously disassociate those two data sets.
And the other one is making bringing in more people. What are some of the ones that you take a look at and you think are doing a pretty good job?
For bringing in more users to Facebook?
Yes, and keeping them.
Yeah, I mean, Instagram is huge for them right now. I mean, Instagram does not have the kind of social, it's not taboo so much in the way that Facebook has kind of become. I don't think there's a lot of people, there are many out there, especially outside of the U.S., who don't even realize Facebook owns Instagram, and so they can use it, and they think they're using a different company's product. And then there's also WhatsApp, and WhatsApp is a messaging service, so they don't have ads in the way that Facebook and Instagram do. But it is more than 1.5 billion users around the globe, and a lot of the growth that you see from Facebook's network is coming from those other two apps. And so that is the kind of stuff where Chris Hughes and others, Elizabeth Warren, for example, have said, hey, Facebook needs to take these other properties, make them their own companies, because once Facebook figures out how to kind of tie them all together into one massive machine, it's going to be, it's going to be hard to stop.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Kurt Wagner, social media and technology reporter with Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Join us on Monday for WBBM's annual Education Week, when we examine the business of getting into college. And still to come, Americans show just how much they love mom.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Most people don't tend to cut corners when it comes to spending on Mother's Day. We welcome in Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor based in New York. Bob, welcome back to the program. Tell us a little bit about the impact of Mother's Day on the economy. When it comes to holiday spending, it's one of the big ones.
The third largest, as a matter of fact, which is kind of surprising, only behind back to school. And, you know, what the interesting thing, I think, is the new mom is fur babies. It's an awful big market. Pets are hot this time of year, and an awful lot of people are finding the concept of mothering goes across all categories.
And what is the typical Mother's Day gift? Is it, at least when you're counting up how much somebody spends, is it a card? Flowers, and then some, you know, a gift certificate or a nice dinner.
Yeah.
All of the above.
It's a combination, I think, of cards, you know, of low price items like cards, as well as fine jewelry is second to that. But, you know, a call costs nothing, so we don't tally those up.
You mentioned this generation. What do you see in the trends, the trend for this generation?
For this holiday, we're certainly seeing that if you're between 30 and 45, you're more likely to spend on it. And last year the weather was pretty hot and rainy. We're expecting better weather, which usually translates to higher sales for across the board, whether that's restaurants or gifts.
A lot of parties outdoors or going to a rink or something. Doing things rather than sitting around a table.
Certainly, and then figuring out how does that go on to Instagram? Let's be honest, I mean, it didn't happen unless we can put it on social media, right? So there's all kinds of other things that go along with that, the location and getting the right props and the right shot, still just as important.
So Bob, you're saying that the social media experience and making sure that you could share what you did on Instagram or Facebook, that is actually goosing Mother's Day?
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, let's make no mistake about it. We're all becoming content creators, and if you can do something with your mom, that's going to get an awful lot of likes.
Well, thank you very much, Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor, retaildoc.com, based in New York. The lesson today, people, everyone loves their mama, and everyone loves posting. and Mother's Day combines both of those interests.
Monday, it's going to be swirling with pictures.
Yes, absolutely. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time 12:55 Business News, sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. And here is Alisa Peretti.
Chris, President Trump is striking a more conciliatory tone, saying he got a letter from China's president and that the two might speak on the phone and that he has an excellent alternative to reaching a China trade deal. It is the difference between the Dow's 450-point loss at its worst and its now 138-point loss now. The NASDAQ is down 29 points and the S&P lower by 10. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is sliding just 0.25% lower now. Intel is the worst performer on the Dow after the chipmaker's long-term forecast showed growth maybe tepid for years. That stock down more than 4.5% on the day, with losses for 12 of 13 trading days. Netflix has acquired a children's media brand called Storybots as it gets ready to challenge rival Disney's kid-friendly online platform. That's scheduled to launch in November. Under the deal, Storybots creators will produce more original content, including series and short-form specials. Crude oil futures slightly lower at $61.69 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Alisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.